Les colloques du Collège de France.
I think most of you know Michel de Graaf in relation to Creole exceptionalism and his claim center stage on that. And Michel has also published on complexity and raised enormous serious issues about the way it has been interpreted in linguistics. And right now he is very much engaged in the use of Creole in teaching STEM, science, technology, right?
Engineering and math.
Yeah. So, without further ado, now the floor is yours, Michel.
Thank you, Sally. Yeah. So I'm sitting at 418. So, Sally, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real honor. As you said, I met you when I was a student, and I've been looking up to you since then. And thank you for being so erratic in your thinking and for being a trailblazer. So I've been reading Suzanne Comer-Sylvain since I was a student in the late 80s. And I was always struck by Sylvain's claim that Haitian Creole is French words in the mold of the West African syntax, particularly Ewe. And the thing is, after you read almost 100 pages of Sylvain showing very detailed correspondences between Haitian Creole, which I would just call Creole, and both French and various African languages, especially the languages of the Bay group in Benin, Togo, and parts of Nigeria, it was quite surprising that a conclusion contradicts a data. And then on March 8, 2024, I was invited, thanks to Cyril Pressoir, Ricard Sandorcé, who are here, and to the ambassador of Haiti at UNESCO, Dominique Dupuis. I was invited to give a talk for the delegation of Haiti at UNESCO. It was a celebration of Sylvain's life and oeuvre. And I had a chance to revisit Sylvain's work almost 40 years after I first encountered the book. And it's only now that I think that I've begun to fully understand both the importance and impact of Sylvain's work together with the roots and the consequences of some of the contradictions. And the latter are quite instructive, especially as we compare her views from back in 1936 with those of today among Creolists and linguists in the 21st century. So now I think that Sylvain's life is quite a lesson for us in our fight today against neocolonization of various sorts, both in academia and beyond. So what I will do in this talk is to analyze Sylvain's work, actually parts of her work, in the context of the role that Creole languages have been playing in research and education in Haiti, and then also think of the politics, which is never too far from these two fields, linguistics and education, especially when we look at the origins of various claims about Creole languages. So our question is going to be, how can the biography and work of Suzanne Sylvain help us linguists and educators work for a better tomorrow, not only for Haiti, but for other former colonies that suffer from language barriers like in Haiti? So because as a linguist, anthropologist, and feminist, as you'll see very soon, Suzanne Sylvain was fighting for decolonization and liberation. On the linguistic front, she wanted to show that Creole was not broken French or corrupt French, but what you will see is that even as she was an anti-colonial scholar, she herself had to struggle with her own family background, her own mentors in the field of linguistics and anthropology. So actually, some of her struggles reflect my own struggles in my field, with my own colleagues in linguistics, where I myself as well, I am engaging the path for decolonization and liberation. And I realize that she and I, we share so much in common. But I'll let you ask for these parallels perhaps in the Q&A because it's very complex to get into. But as a hint, you know, look at my pen and you might guess as to what kind of struggles I'm hinting at. So, okay, so back to Sylvain. So what we need to do to understand fully the import of her work, I'm going to give you two snapshots, two vignettes that bracket her work, one that starts in the 18th century and one that goes in the 21st century, right? So this is at the end of the 18th century. We have our founding father, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. He knew way back when that he had to fight, he and his army, that he called the indigenous army, that they had to fight both the hot power of the cannons of France and the soft power of French culture and language. So even as his troops were battling the hard power of Napoleon's army, which was sent to Colonel Haiti, known then as Saint-Domingue, to restore slavery, and if need be, to kill all the blacks and replace them with newly enslaved Africans. So during that revolution, Dessalines was reported to have responded to a locally born white landowner who had addressed him in French, and he said, "Why speak another nation's language when we have our own? Tiens bien langue à vous, pour qui chercher langue les autres." So in Dessalines' view, the French linguistic soft power had been a more powerful tool than the military hard power. Now, let's jump to the 21st century, right? So given, so think of Dessalines' vision for Creole as langue à nous, our own language. Now, let's jump to the 21st century. This is what you see in the classroom today. So this is what, on the left, this is what's called a symbole. And this is what's given for a child to wear if the child is caught speaking Creole. It says that, "Je dois toujours m'exprimer en français, sinon je suis le gorille de la classe." So I have to speak French always, otherwise I'm the gorilla of the class. And on the right, what do you see? You see a teacher with scissors who threatens the child that she'll cut the child's tongue if the child is caught speaking Creole. That's in the 21st century. Now, the thing is, it's difficult, if at all possible, that Haiti or any other country in the world, be it in the Caribbean, in Africa, could ever achieve anything like development if the students' mother tongues are disenfranchised in classrooms, at schools, universities, in courtrooms, etc. It's totally impossible. Now, that's another vignette here, and here I must thank Cyril Pressoir for sharing this article with me, because what you see here is that this repression of identity goes beyond language. So the title of this article says that between fear and colorism, black dolls are despised in stores in Haiti. So the point is that Haitian kids prefer to play with white dolls than black dolls. And that goes back to this famous doll test in the 1940s in the US that was used to help desegregate American schools. So because of time, there's much more to say about these three vignettes and the story they tell about Haiti's noble and tragic history of decolonization. But I wrote this piece in the New York Times that will give you a pretty good summary of this struggle. So the title in English is, "As a child in Haiti, I was taught to despise my language and myself." So now let's go back to Sylvain, keeping this struggle, this long struggle for decolonization in mind. And the fact that the Dessalines' dream of for our langue à nous is still not realized. So this is the light in which we need to understand what did Sylvain try to contribute to the struggle for decolonization. So we're going to proceed in three steps. So the first step, we're going to look at Sylvain's contributions to linguistics, especially to Creole studies, in the context of colonial and neocolonial hegemony. In the second step, we're going to look at the history of mental change in Haiti with geopolitical origins in colonial and social class struggles. And then to end, I'm going to point to perhaps a brighter future, to look at one decolonial way to de-zombify, de-zombification, and break the mental chains through language and linguistics and education, which I think are powerful weapons for liberation. Okay, so this is the cover of Sylvain's perhaps most famous book, Le Creole Haïtien, Morphologie et Syntaxe. So what I'm going to tell you very quickly now is how successful this book was, and then turn to the limitations of the book. So first, some praise. So we start with praise from a professor in the US at Columbia, linguistics at Columbia, Maurice Goodman, well-known Creolist, and he calls Sylvain's book one of the finest studies of any Creole language up to that time. In fact, it was the first time that there was any such detailed work on any Creole language anywhere in the world. Sylvain's was really a monumental contribution to Creole studies and to linguistics. Then this is very sweet here. This is a review from Sylvain's own husband, Jean Comer, actually reviewing his own wife's book. But I picked this from the archives because he has one sentence that's a very nice summary of the paradigm shift that Sylvain intended. And now the stress is on intended. She had the intention to break through a number of myths about Creoles. And in that one sentence, Jacomère summarizes those three breaks that she wanted to make. First, the notion that Creoles were not worth studying. So she wanted to show that, in fact, Creoles are worth studying. The idea that Creoles are exceptional, exceptions to the rules, she wanted to show that, no, they are not exceptional, they're like any other language. And then the idea that Creole is baby French, infantile French, or broken French. So she wanted to also break through that myth. Now what we have to ask is whether she did meet this challenge. Now, this is, actually, I must again thank UNESCO, the event that the Haitian delegation at UNESCO organized for Suzanne Sylvain on March 8th, because through that event, I discovered this beautiful praise for Sylvain by anthropologist Lainec Urbon, who speaks very highly of Sylvain, but he touches on something very important about Sylvain's work in linguistics. He writes that while in 1936, and actually that part, Sally, reminds me of your article in your interview in Bastille. So Urbon writes, while in 1936, Creole was considered a simple, bastardized derivative of the French language, Commère Sylvain worked to show the importance of the African contribution in the formation of Haitian Creole. The consequences of such research, carried out with rigor, are immense. Listen to this. The current offensive of French imperialism, hidden behind Francophonie, curiously returns to Haiti with the theme of the Creole language, quote, Siamese sister of the French language, to legitimize the exclusion and rejection of Creole as if it were not an important factor, if not one of the very basis of popular culture. The scientific work of Commère Sylvain opposes the Francophile propaganda that is still dominant in Haiti and which ultimately means the assimilation of the Haitian people to French culture. And actually, that comment by Urbon is right on target. And today still, among Haitian intellectuals, you find so many examples that actually view Haitians as worthier if they can achieve French culture. And we're going to get back to that. Actually, the next slide is a very interesting contrast because Jules Fenn, in the same year as Sylvain, and according to Sylvain's husband, Jules Fenn is the cousin of Sylvain. He published this book called Philologie Creole, where he took the opposite view of Sylvain. So Sylvain claimed that Haitian Creole is essentially an African language, basically an Ewe language. And what Jules Fenn argues is that no, that Haitian Creole is not African, it's really a Neo-Romance language derived from the Languedoc by way of Old Norman, Picard, Angevin, and Poitvin, and composed of words borrowed from, among others, English and Spanish, but only in a limited way. Essentially, Haitian Creole is a variety of French. Now, what Jean Comer describes is that Commère Sylvain, in a book, set up a storm of long duration in Haiti by claiming that Creole, far from being infantile French or petit nègre, and in spite of the fact that the lexicon is mostly of French origin, that Creole is a grammar which made it a member of the African Ewe family. And what Comer adds, which is actually quite precise and perceptive, is that when Sylvain says that Haitians were really speaking an African language, this was just too much for the elite to bear. Even if, you know, they would use Creole to joke around, but to claim that Creole was African was an insult. And Commère Sylvain's cousin, Jules Fenn, basically he decided that I'm going to spend the rest of my life, to show that my cousin was wrong. Now, there's an interesting detail to note. Sylvain's book became famous and has led many interesting research based on a hypothesis, but Fenn's work has been forgotten, mostly, but yet when both were published, the one that did get an award from France from the, was Fenn. So Fenn's book was recognized by, it was couronné, awarded by the Académie Française in 1937. It's a small detail that's quite important, and you'll see why later on. Okay, now, as it turns out, much of Sylvain's work was dedicated actually to answering a question that her own father, Georges Sylvain had asked. So Georges Sylvain was really avant-garde. So back in 1901, his dream was that Creole should be used as a language of instruction in Haiti, right? But then he said, well, is Creole a language? And then he wrote, no one disputes that Creole is derived from French, but then can we recognize that Creole has its own originality? Is Creole endowed with the qualities of strength, finesse, or elegance, which could allow it to claim the honor of literary criticism, of literary creations? In other words, is Creole a dialect, or a patois, or should we define it? And so in my opinion, this is worth asking, because we need to, basically, it's one of that, we need to use Creole for instruction. So we need to know, is it really a language, right? So in a way, Sylvain went ahead to answer a father's question about what Creole is. So now let's turn to Sylvain's answer to a father's question about the origin and nature of Creole grammar. So remember, the main empirical claim of the book, I mean, if you don't just go to the conclusion, as many of us have done in the past, if you read the entire book, what Sylvain does is very carefully look at parallels between both Haitian Creole and French, but also between Haitian Creole and African languages. But there's something actually a little bit peculiar once you start digging deeper into comparisons. Whenever she compares Haitian Creole to African languages, she often brings up the notion that African languages are very simple, right? For example, she says here that the common use in Creole of periphrastic forms, so we heard a lot today about periphrastic, you know, from the very beginning with Klinger, then with Fabiola, then with Daniel Véronique, we heard a lot today about the TMA forms, the auxiliary forms. And she says that, you know, these forms are generally found in all hybrid dialects. It's also found in children's language, however, nowhere it is so clearly characterized as in African languages, right? So this should already give you a sign that Sylvain was immersed in certain beliefs about Africans being somehow primitive. But yet, she still does a remarkable job always looking for African etima for Creole forms alongside French etima. So in a way, her work subsumes already much of the work that we heard today, you know, from Thomas Klinger, from Daniel, from Fabiola, because she's very careful in looking at every item in the Creole auxiliary system, the tense, mood, and aspect markers, and looking for analogies in both African languages and in French. So I won't spend that much time, because you've heard so much today about this connection between the TME systems of Creole languages and that of French or that of African languages. So let's go quickly over that. So here, this is a very nice, I like this slide, because she goes through the Creole TME system. She starts with A, Va, Ava. She goes to Te, that we heard a lot today about. She goes to Ape, that we also learned a lot. We heard a lot about. And then she shows that each of these can be connected with a French etima, but she also, in other parts of the book, connects these items to Ewe or other African languages etima, right? Very, very ambitious. And so, in a way, in 1936, Sylvain's approach was very modern, because actually, if you look at, there's this article that was published in Nature a few years ago by Blasi, Aspelmath, and Michaelis, and I like to call this paper The Big Data Against the Big Dogma of Creole Constitutionalism. Because what it shows is that, in fact, Creole languages are like another language. If you take a very careful look at all the data, then basically the grammars of the contact languages were passed down in various ways to the Creole language. But that's also the point that Sylvain made in 1936, that if you compare Haitian Creole grammar with the grammar of French and the grammar of the African languages, you see many parts. Basically, those languages provided a feature pool, using a term from Salico Komofuene, from which Haitian Creole grammar was created. So basically, what this article in Nature is doing now is basically implementing Sylvain's program using big data, in a way. So now let's move to some, and only to some of the constraints of Sylvain's work, and how some of these are still with us today in academia. Okay, so you heard before this idea that she wanted to break down this myth that Haitian Creole is infantile French, simplified French. But then what she does, though, which is very unfortunate, she replaced this myth by another myth, right? If you look at what she's saying here, it's actually a very, very sad part of the book. When I get to it, it says, well, yes, Creole grammar doesn't have the vocabulary of any African language, but the syntax is very similar to that of African languages. And what you find in Africa, and here she cites a rabid racist called Monsieur Migeaud, who actually believed that Africans were the most primitive species on Earth. And then Sylvain quotes them approvingly to say that, well, it's because all the African languages had similar grammars, and this is what triggered the simplicity in Haitian Creole grammar, right? So basically what she's doing here, although she tried to valorize Creole, but she does it in a way that contradicts what she wanted to achieve, right? So now, this put aside, what I want to show here is some of the ways in which Sylvain influenced many contemporary linguists in this view that Creole grammar is an African grammar with European words. So this is a famous claim, right? That basically Haitian Creole is a langue way a vocabulaire français. So we're in the presence of a form of French fashioned in the mode of African syntax. Basically, that Creole is an Ewe language with a French vocabulary. And now we can go to in the 21st century, actually, this is late 20th century, we go to Claire Lefebvre's book on the genesis of Haitian Creole grammar. And it's basically the very same claim. So Sylvain's hypothesis, which actually is contradicted by her data, has been taken up almost wholesale by contemporary scholars like Claire Lefebvre, which is probably one of the most generous grants. I mean, she did her work with one of the biggest grants in the history of Canadian funding. But yet, it's a project that basically takes Sylvain's claim about Haitian Creole and tries to embed it within a larger theoretical framework that's called racification, right? So let's move on quickly here because of time. But what I want to show very quickly now, and we can show it just with three data points, is that this idea that Creole grammar reflects Ewe syntax doesn't hold. And we can show it by looking at a striking pattern in African languages from that area of West Africa. So in the Bay languages, Ewe, Gongbe, Fongbe, you have a very striking pattern when it comes to clause structure. So when you take a simple sentence like I eat rice, you get the order SVO, subject, verb, object. But then something interesting happens when you have a TME marker like the progressive. So when you say, I am eating rice, you get the object come before the verb. So you have this contrast between the SVO order, I eat rice, versus this SOV order in I am eating rice. You say, I am rice eating. Now this is very robust, and that's a very striking pattern in Ewe syntax. So if indeed Haitian Creole grammar was isomorphic to Ewe syntax, you would expect to say something like in Creole, moi manger diri, and then you would have to say map diri manger, but you don't get that. In Haitian Creole, you get SVO whether or not you have this TME marker. So this is a very quick example to show that theory doesn't hold. And we could go further and look at other examples. But now what we want to ask ourselves is, why would Sylvain make such a claim that's so empirically problematic? And the claim comes at the end of a book where she shows so clearly that Haitian Creole syntax also takes from French syntax, especially in the TME system, for example. Right? So why is that? So John Holm, actually in his book on Creoles and Pigeons, he actually tells us that Suzanne Sylvain didn't want to have this conclusion in a book. So he says that Suzanne told me, and actually he's citing someone else who told him, Suzanne told me when I discussed this matter with her that this was not her own opinion, but that of a mentor who had required her to put it at the end of a book. So the conclusion which was imposed by a mentor was actually contradicted by her own data. That's kind of sad. But then what we have to ask is, what other pressures was she under for her to conclude a book with a claim that contradicts the data in the book? So first, this is the mentor. So actually, in the first page of the book, she gives thanks to ma chère maîtresse, Mademoiselle Lilias Hamburger. So a mentor is actually an interesting character. She's a well-known linguist. In fact, she was a mentor also to Leopold Sedar-Senghor. She has a very interesting history. But she was a missionary, and then she developed this passion for African languages. But somehow, she became convinced that all African languages have the same grammar, that they are all the same. And in fact, she went even further to say that even languages like Basque and Dravidian, they are connected to African languages, that they're all Africans. You know, well, it's a very beautiful, romantic notion, but it doesn't hold true. But this was Sylvain's mentor. But then, alongside Lilias Humberger, she also had other mentors, like Melville Herskovitz. Many of you might know him in anthropology. And Herskovitz, he wrote this book that was actually quite influential in the 40s called The Myth of the Negro Past. And what this book wanted to do, which was very much like what Sylvain wanted to do with Haitian Creole, is to valorize African-American culture by showing that African-American culture is not a bastard, broken, impoverished culture, that actually is a very rich culture. And for Herskovitz, the way to show the beauty of Black culture in the US is to show that it's connected to what he called a reputable past. You see, and that reputable past was from Africa. That one way his goal was to decrease racism. He wanted to fight against anti-Black racism. And he thought that the way to do it is to show the beauty of Black culture by connecting it to African culture, right? I mean, one could argue whether that could ever be true, that you could decrease racism by showing the influence of African culture in Black American culture. But that was his goal. And that same goal, actually, he also wanted to apply to Black English, you know, and very much like what Sylvain was doing with Haitian Creole, Herskovitz did the very same claim about African American English. He says basically the Africans took a new vocabulary, in this case English, and imposed that lexicon to the native speech patterns, right? So what you see there is that Sylvain was not alone in that struggle to try to valorize a despised language, a symbolized language, by using Africa as a recourse. But in the case of Sylvain, the way she did it was actually by accentuating various myths about African languages. And there's something else about Sylvain, which is that in a book, and if you look at a larger work, there's an hierarchy. She still puts Creole and African languages below European language. And one has to ask, where is that from? And actually, if you dig a bit into Sylvain's biography, you see that her own uncle, actually quite famous uncle, because he was one of the founders of Pan-Africanism. He worked with the King of Ethiopia. He was very influential in the development of Pan-Africanist thought. So Benito Sylvain, even he, as a staunch Pan-Africanist, as a staunch decolonial thinker, he believed that that colonization is a good thing. That colonization is one way in which to elevate the indigenous people. You know, that in its broad sense, you can see colonization as a natural expansion of a people who, having achieved a certain political, economic, and moral development, now has to give it to other people who are at a lower scale, right? And then he goes further to say things like that it's a normal phenomenon. It's as natural as immigration, right? And he goes on to say that the founding of colonies is the best thing that, you know, powers can do. And then now this part is also interesting when you think of Sylvain's approach to Creole and African languages. So Benito Sylvain basically was an exponent of the what can call the miso civilisatrice or the white man's burden. The idea is that, you know, the white people have culture, have civilization, and through colonization they can share it with the lower indigenous people, right? And so basically to colonize well means to civilize. Okay, so and so that was Benito Sylvain. Now, another person that also one can think about that had a major influence on Sylvain was Jean-Price Morse. So Jean-Price Morse, the famous author of So Spoke the Uncle, Ainsi Parla l'Oncle, is often viewed as one of the founders of Negritude. But even Jean-Price Morse, who, you know, one of his major claims in his work is to say, well, we Haitians, we should stop viewing ourselves as colored Frenchmen. We should get rid of what he called collective Bovarism, and we should espouse our and be proud of our African culture. But even Jean-Price Mars, you know, if you read him carefully, he too had this view that African languages were inferior, that he thought that Creole is a collective creation that emanates from the need that masters and slaves feel to communicate their thoughts to each other. So basically, on the one hand, you have the Africans who speak primitive, he calls them harsh and inharmonious idioms, coming from tribes that were collected from all sides of Africa and imported into the furnace of Saint-Domingue. And on the other end, you have the French, you know, who can give them the instrument of civilization, right? And he calls French, you know, this beautiful instrument of for thought. Okay, so that's Jean-Price Mars, and he too was a mentor to Sylvain. Okay, so now what we can ask then is, so basically what Sylvain was doing, even though she was struggling to valorize Creole, to decolonize approaches to Creole languages, but she herself was enchained in these mental constraints, right? I cannot think of any clearer case of language and linguistics as tools for enslavement, for mental enslavement. And it shouldn't surprise anyone, because in order for Europe to justify its domination over Africans, it had to use knowledge, in this case, linguistic knowledge, as tools for power. So this goes back to the broader framework of scientific racism, which the goal was to use science to try to prove that the Africans were lower humans. And linguistics, as part of that, had to prove that African languages were at a lower level and a reflex of this lower humanity. So what you see then in Sylvain's work is a reflex of that, of this entire framework, which is really for dehumanization of Africans and then in turn of Haitians. But what's sad is to see how Sylvain internalized this hierarchy and how it basically infected her own work. Okay, so here I just want to point out that, you know, this is not special to Haiti, right? So you can go back centuries and you find similar patterns. So if you go back to 1492, so Nebrija, remember, he claimed when he gave his Spanish grammar to Queen Isabella, he told the queen, look, this will be your tool to conquer the natives of America. Because if you tell them that Spanish is the real human language, that what they speak is not language, then that will be one true way to establish your conquest on the people of the Americas. And the same is true in India. So this is Thomas Macaulay, right? Thomas Macaulay, he used the English language to try to convince the Indians that the humanity via the Sanskrit language was inferior. So here it says that we white Britons, we have to use English to educate an Indian people who cannot learn in the mother tongue, because the mother tongue is too deficient, and this is Sanskrit. So the idea is that Sanskrit is a impoverished language as compared to English, which is totally upside down if you think of the history of English. And then, you know, closer to us, this is the president of France saying clearly that economic power and culture go hand in hand, and that's why we must use the French language as part of Francophonie to conquer the world. Okay, but now, just to show you how powerful these thoughts can be, you find them even these hierarchies of language. You even find them at UNESCO of all places. So, and now this is quite ironic that because UNESCO, remember, part of the mission is to aim at respect for human rights via linguistic diversity. Now, a couple of years ago, this was before Ambassador Dominique Dupuy make a big fuss about this at a public meeting at UNESCO, but until 2 years ago, UNESCO had this survey that they would send to every country to for them to fill out about the national languages. And what you see in this survey is that there is isolate and then langue, tout court, language, and then below langue tout court, you have mixed language, Creole and Pidgin, right? So, which implies then that a Creole language, or a mixed language, or a Pidgin language is not language, right? But luckily, you know, so we have Carson Dorsey is here, who's been basically working to revise this this Soviet UNESCO, so that's no longer being applied. But yet, it was quite shocking to see that. Luckily, in linguistics, there's been a big push against that. So, and this is where we should be very thankful to Federico Mufwene, right here. You know, for the past 40 years, maybe, Sally has been pushing against these hierarchies of language that really reflect hierarchies of power. And one thing, this is one of my favorite maps from Sally Coco, which really shows that really there is nothing outside of migration and language contact to account for language change and globalization. So basically the same way that Romance languages have evolved from Latin via migration and contact, that's also the way that you have to understand the evolution of Creole languages through migration and contact, right? So I love that map a lot because it shows you the continuity of these processes of migration and contact, not only in creating Romance languages, but then in creating Creole languages as well. So if you want to hear more, you can go to YouTube and listen to Sally's inaugural lecture at Collège de France, and you'll get more details on this approach. And since I'm about to finish, so this is a reference where, this is a very long paper, where I take Sylvain's claim in lots of details to show that it doesn't work, although it was quite influential, but eventually it didn't work. And then I have this paper with Enoch Abo, where we give you what we think is a much better perspective on Creole formation, and it's in a book edited by Sally and colleagues. But yet, though, I cannot end without giving heartfelt thanks to Suzanne Sylvain for being a trailblazer, because what she did in 1936 was quite powerful, because the data in the book are so rich. In fact, listening to the talks earlier about Te, Ate, you know, I kept thinking about similar comparisons in Sylvain's book in 1936. And now to go back to the challenge that Georges Sylvain gave to his daughter, you know, the question of can Haitian Creole be used for instruction? But this question, actually, I like to say, you know, being at Collège de France, being in Paris, was already answered by René Descartes in the 17th century, because when he published his Discours de la Méthode in French in the 17th century already, which then French was the vernacular language, it was the vulgar language. Actually, the other day we passed, Sally and I, we passed the University of Paris, and at the University of Paris, back then, students were beaten for speaking French. You had to speak Latin. If you spoke French right there in Paris, you were beaten, because Latin was the official prestige language. But Descartes wrote, if I write in French, which is the language of my country, rather than in Latin, which is that of my professors, it is because I hope that those who use only the pure natural reason will judge better from my opinions than those who believe only in ancient books. And for those who combine common sense with study, whom alone I wish for my judges, they will not be, I make sure, so biased for Latin that my use of the vulgar language would prevent them from reading my analysis. So today then, any effort to exclude students' native languages from the classroom is not based on any scientific insight. It's based on the same racist ideology, also known as white supremacy, that Suzanne Sylvain and her father were fighting against way back when. So it's quite ironic that almost four centuries after Descartes, we still have experts at the well-known Agence Française de Développement working in Haiti, and they are still contributing to preventing the use of children's mother tongues in Haiti. In so doing, they actually block the development and they violate human rights, you know, and they further deepen the roots of misery in the global south. So in reality, this Agence Française de Développement and its consultants, including its francophile Haitian experts, so they are Haitian experts paid by the Agence for the Development, who go to Haiti to work for the and the development of Haiti, because what they do, those Haitian experts, they're in Haiti and they promote the French agenda that French should be the language of instruction. And the idea is that, you know, the goal of Haitian schools is for the kids to become perfect bilingual in Creole and French. And therefore, in reality, what they do, they give priority to French over Creole. And all of that is in keeping with the history of France in Haiti's misery, through colonization, slavery, ransom, and now miseducation, right? So for my part, you know, what I've been doing for the past, you know, 14, 15 years is leading this approach called the MIT Initiative, which is really promoting a decolonial perspective for Haitian education. So I like to think of this as a counterpentation resistance. And so I'll end with that. And I'll end with inviting you to check it out, MIT Haiti. And our slogan is, Tout moun se moun, tout lang se lang. You know, every human is human, and every language is language. And that's really in keeping with Sylvain's vision, although she kind of failed to realize it, but I still take inspiration from her. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.